Hi, this is Gordon Deal. The award-winning Wall Street Journal This Morning starts right after this. Wix.com lets you easily create a beautiful professional website for free. With hundreds of stunning templates, cool features, and popular apps, you can get your business online today. Start now at Wix.com. That's W-I-X.com.
Live from the newsroom of the Wall Street Journal, this is the Wall Street Journal This Morning, America's first news with Gordon Deal.
An Afghan soldier opens fire on Western officials. Good morning, I'm Gordon Deal, along with Mike Weinstein, who's in for Gina Cervetti. Glad you're with us. Wednesday, August 6th. Here's what's up this hour.
In a so-called green-on-blue attack, a two-star American general has been killed in Kabul. More than a dozen other international officials were injured.
Controversy has developed over the unapproved drugs given to two Americans with Ebola. Liberians are asking why they can't get the same medicine.
This is day two of a ceasefire between Israel and Hamas. We'll take you to Gaza City to see what Palestinians are doing in the 72-hour window.
And it's not just a men-only club anymore. At least three female members of Congress now sleep in their offices.
It's actually very convenient because they have their own gym on Capitol Hill, so they'll wake up. One of the congresswomen said she goes to the gym. It forces her to go to the gym a lot more often because they'll go there, they'll work out in the morning, get ready for the day, and then get on with daily effort of Congress.
Wall Street Journal reporter Michael Crittenden on who's doing it and why. He's here later in the hour. An Afghan soldier killed a two-star U.S. Army general when he opened fire on a group of Western military officers yesterday in Kabul, Afghanistan. 52-year-old Major General Harold Green is now the highest-ranking American casualty in more than a decade of war. White House spokesman Josh Earnest says it's another painful reminder of the sacrifices made every day by the men and women in uniform.
The thoughts and prayers of those of us here at the White House are with the family of the general. Are with the soldiers and the family of those who were injured in this attack.
The attacker was armed with a machine gun and wearing an Afghan Army uniform when he surprised the visiting group of Western military officials and fired dozens of rounds before being killed on the grounds of the Afghan Army Officers' School. The shooter wounded at least 17 others. More now from Wall Street Journal Pentagon correspondent Julian Barnes. And Julian, tell us about the general.
The general is General Harold Green. He's a major general and an expert on logistics who was deployed to Afghanistan as part of the training effort and aimed to boost up the logistics ability of the Afghan military, which is a key problem for the Afghan forces. This general had recently been back home for a leave from what was supposed to be a long deployment. We believe this was his first time in Afghanistan, and this is significant because he's so senior. We have not had such a high-ranking officer killed in an overseas war zone since the Vietnam. Obviously, there was a three-star general killed in the attack on the Pentagon. But you have to go back to the Vietnam War for a two-star general who has been killed.
What do we know, Julian, about how the attack played out?
Well, there was a light machine gun used by an Afghan Army soldier. Now, Pentagon officials tell me that the early indications are that this attack was not a pre-planned attack. This is not something that the Taliban hatched over time. They believe that something set off this individual soldier and that he took out the attack on a whim or just out of a pique, that this is not something that was planned by Taliban forces, nor do they think that the general was specifically targeted. He just happened to be a target opportunity. You know, there's been in the past a lot of insider attacks. They've declined in recent years as the vetting of the Afghan army has improved and more precautions have been taken. But this is a reminder that in war, things like this can happen.
We're speaking with Wall Street Journal Pentagon correspondent Julian Barnes. And this was an actual Afghan soldier, right? Not someone just dressed as a soldier?
That's right. And that is key to the military, and if it was an infiltration, they feel that it would have a bigger strategic consequence. It would raise more questions about the ability to vet and keep out the Taliban assailants from the ranks of the Afghan army. But, you know, U.S. officials do not think that this will have a strategic impact on the ability of the United States and the Afghan government to come to an agreement over a long-term troop presence for the next couple of years.
Thanks, Julian. Wall Street Journal Pentagon correspondent Julian Barnes. Well, for Major General Harold Green, the military was the family business. He followed in the footsteps of his father and grandfather to his post in the Army. His wife is a retired Army colonel, his son, a West Point grad, and a first lieutenant stationed at Fort Sill, Oklahoma. He's also survived by a 22-year-old daughter. General Green was known by relatives and neighbors as a family man. He was living in Falls Church, Virginia, before he was deployed to Afghanistan. Army spokeswoman, Lieutenant Colonel Juanita Chang.
Our hearts and prayers go out to the family, and I have spoken to the family, and the family has asked that I pass along that they believe that the Army, as well as Afghanistan and America, has lost a true hero today.
His wife, retired Colonel Sue Myers, was a professor at the U.S. Army War College in Carlisle, Pennsylvania. They met while each was stationed in Europe. General Green was a diehard Boston sports fan, and as long as his parents were stationed together, his son says General Green was always the coach of his son's teams. Before Afghanistan, General Green served in command posts overseeing acquisition and systems management and has dealt with intelligence, electronic warfare, and sensors. His posts have included duty at the Pentagon and at military bases in Kansas, Missouri, New Jersey, and in Germany and Greece. 13 minutes now after the hour on the Wall Street Journal This Morning.
Being in global sales, I never know where my job will take me. The last thing I need to worry about while traveling is outrageous data charges. That's why I switched to T-Mobile's Simple Choice for Business Plan. I get unlimited text and data in over 100 countries at no extra charge. No multiple SIM cards or international data plans. I just land, turn on my phone, and it works. Switch to T-Mobile at T-Mobile.com/business.
Limited time only. Subject to change. Capable device required. Standard speeds approximately 128 kilobits per second. See T-Mobile.com for details and included destinations.
Thanks for being with us on this Wednesday as the second U.S. Ebola patient arrived in Atlanta. Health authorities in Liberia raised questions about how the woman and an American doctor were given an experimental U.S. treatment unavailable to the hundreds of Africans sickened by the deadly virus. While still in Liberia, both Nancy Wrightball, who was working at an Ebola center for a Christian charity, and Kent Brantley, a physician there, received an experimental drug known as ZMAP. The drug's safety has not been tested in humans. Liberian officials did not approve the drug, but nor did they disapprove it. But now officials there are being bombarded with requests from dying patients and their relatives for the same treatment. Back to Atlanta now, and Wall Street Journal reporter Cameron McWhirter, who's on the T-Mobile hotline. Cam, tell us about Ms. Wrightball.
She arrived Tuesday in the middle of the day, approximately 1 o'clock. She came here into the hospital. Unlike her colleague, Dr. Kent Brantley, who was brought here on Saturday, who, you know, he walked in on his own, with his own strength, into the hospital. She was carried in on a stretcher. She's 59 years old. And he's 33 years old, so it's believed that because of his youth, that he may be dealing with the illness better than someone who's older, because it is an immune disease. It attacks, you know, you really need your immune system to kick in to fight the disease.
What is the specialized area in the hospital that she's in like?
It's a specialized unit. There's only a few of these in the country that can deal with highly infectious diseases. And it is one of the reasons Emory has it is because there's a great expertise here, in part because we're just down the road. It's just down the road from the CDC. It's literally on the same road, the hospital. And this unit is specially built to contain, you know, for a person to be absolutely contained. They have access to a phone. They have access to various other things. They can see and talk to family members through glass. But everything else is highly restricted. Any fluids that they emit are processed through a series of cleaning systems. They can't interact with anyone outside the in the public, and it's all to contain this highly contagious disease.
We're speaking with Wall Street Journal reporter Cameron McWhirter in Atlanta. Any word on Xi and how the doctor are doing?
The hospital certainly is being extremely tight-lipped about that. However, there are indications from the CDC director said over the weekend, and then the two Christian charities that are involved in the Ebola Center in Liberia where the two patients were infected, have said that they are stable. The doctor apparently seems to be doing better, and the woman who was brought in Tuesday appears to be eating. She was drinking coffee, according to her husband. So there are signs that they're cognizant, but as for the long-term prognosis or anything, no one's really saying.
Thanks, Cam. Wall Street Journal reporter Cameron McWhirter from Atlanta. It is 20 minutes now after the hour on the Wall Street Journal this morning. Mike Weinstein is here. He has America's first news.
Gordon, an Afghan soldier opened fire at a group of visiting Western military officials, killing two-starred Major General Harold Green while he and others visited an officer school. U.S. casualties have fallen in the region recently, but White House spokesman Josh Earnest says it's still important to remember how dangerous it is there.
This shooting is, of course, a painful reminder of the service and sacrifice that our men and women in uniform make every day for this country.
Green was 52. The shooter was killed, but not before injuring at least 17 people. The treatment of two Americans with Ebola in Atlanta is causing some controversy elsewhere. Nancy Reitbol and Ken Brantley are receiving doses of ZMapp, an experimental and yet to be approved drug, while Liberian officials are questioning why their citizens do not have access to the meds. The drug's safety has yet to be tested in humans, and experts say it's still too soon to know if it is effective. Apple will introduce its latest version of iPhones at an event on September 9th. If history repeats, the smartphones should be on store shelves about a month or so later. Apple has also called a partial truce in its patent war with rival Samsung. Both decided to dismiss any litigation outside the U.S., effectively eliminating legal disputes in 8 countries. NASDAQ futures down 13 and dropping as we speak. S&P 500 futures down 5. Could be another rough day on Wall Street. And like the milkman and the toll booth operator, another segment of workers is becoming a dinosaur, the entry-level employee. For the young and inexperienced, there are fewer opportunities to get their foot in the door. And according to the Journal's Melissa Korn, you can partially blame technology for that.
Computers can do a lot of the work that humans used to have to do, which means that in order to still engage with this work, you need to be able to manage a computer and oversee pretty high-level tech apps.
To help the situation, many colleges are stepping up training efforts to ensure grads are ready for the challenges ahead. And finally, Gordon, the world champion San Antonio Spurs have hired Becky Hammon as an assistant coach. Hammon announced her retirement as a player effective at the end of the current WNBA season. She is not the first woman to sit on an NBA bench. Lisa Boyer assisted John Lucas while he was the head coach of the Cleveland Cavaliers back in the 2001-2002 season.
But she's the first one to be full salaried.
Right.
Right? Yeah. Apparently has a real sharp basketball IQ.
And was a pretty good player, too.
A very good player. I got to see her a little bit when I was doing public address for the Knicks about 10 years ago, because part of the duties included doing public address for the New York Liberty,
gotcha.
The team she played for at the time. Yeah, real spark plug.
Good deal.
5'6". Probably be the shortest person on that staff, I would imagine. Or maybe in the whole organization, right? Good for her, though. 22 minutes now after the hour on the Wall Street Journal this morning. Coming up next, how to develop your presence, or at least improve it, on 3 fronts. Time now for a small business update, and it's brought to you by Grainger. Get what you need when you need it. Call, click, or stop by today. Get it? Got it? Good. Grainger, for the ones who get it done. What kind of presence do you have in different aspects of your life? It's a growing part of what it means to be a leader in the boardroom, at the dinner table, or on Twitter. You know the people who have it, right? The person who gets the attention of both senior managers and interns at the morning meeting, who sends out witty tweets in the afternoon, and who glides effortlessly through the after-work cocktail party, never at a loss for words. So described by Wall Street Journal reporter Elizabeth Holmes, who says presence is deeper than a personal brand. Elizabeth, what is it?
So it's this sort of magical combination of gravitas and communication skills and a little bit of your appearance thrown in that all add up to your presence, which is something I'm really interested in because I write obviously a lot about fashion and style, but then also a lot about social media and your sort of presence online. Mm-hmm. So we wanted to take a look and understand a little bit more about what this is and how you can go about getting it, because I think it's more important than ever to have a consistent presence in your work life, in your personal life, and online too. And a lot of the experts I talk to, the executive coaching world is very big on presence right now. One of them boiled it down to three different things. It's how you behave, how you talk, and how you look. And if you sort of think about those three buckets, the first, how you behave, is the most important. And that's a combination of your confidence and your ability to command a room, say. It's your body language and things like that. It's communication is also very important. You want to be able to convey what you're trying to say in a very clear manner and get people to sort of go along with you. And then also your appearance is really important. It's the least important of the three, but it's the first filter. It's something people use to sort of subconsciously judge you. And so if you don't pass that test, they're not going to be paying attention to your behavior or your communication skills.
Wow. And this stuff is applicable at work, at home too, right? And online.
Yes. I talked to somebody who has been working on her presence, and she said, you know, presence isn't just something you can have Monday morning when you're really well rested at the office. Yeah. You know, you have to have it on weekends with your kids. You have to have it after hours with your spouse. And especially I've learned in my profession that you have to have it on social media too. Yeah. You have to make sure that the person that you are and the image that you project matches up with your real life persona. You can run into some dangers because you need them to sort of marry well if it's going to help you get ahead professionally and personally.
We're speaking with Wall Street Journal reporter Elizabeth Holmes about how to increase your presence, certainly at work and also at home and online. So where do you begin then if you feel that your presence is lacking, for example?
So the first thing that you should do is do sort of a self-assessment of, you know, who you are and what your strengths and weaknesses are. And then from there, you need to talk to a lot of people in your life. So if you're looking to improve professionally, you can talk to your coworkers or your boss and ask for really honest feedback. Ask them to go through your strengths and weaknesses and not just sort of make general statements like, I don't feel you're a good listener, but give examples of times when they didn't think that and give you some examples of behaviors that you can specifically change to improve. The same is true in your personal life. Somebody I talked to said, talk to your spouse, talk to your kids, ask them for their feedback on you and try and apply that if you know, you're lacking in areas that you want to be a lot stronger.
That is Wall Street Journal reporter Elizabeth Holmes. 30 minutes now after the hour. Trying to keep up with your workload when you're constantly out of the office for meetings can seem impossible. That's why millions of professionals use Citrix GoToMeeting. Meet with clients, coworkers, even new prospects without having to leave your desk, saving you time so you can get more work done. With GoToMeeting, you can meet with anyone from any computer, tablet, or smartphone. Talk face-to-face with HD video conferencing while sharing screens to collaborate on documents, spreadsheets, and presentations in real time. Schedule meetings in advance or meet on the fly without the unnecessary time and expense of travel. GoToMeeting allows you to work smarter, more efficiently, and take more control of your time and resources. Try GoToMeeting today and see how it can make a difference for your business. Don't wait. For your free 30-day trial, visit GoToMeeting.com, click the Try It Free button, and use the promo code WSJ. That's GoToMeeting.com, promo code WSJ.
Wake up to the Wall Street Journal this morning, now on the WSJ radio app.
Thanks for being with us on this Wednesday, August 6th. Gordon Deal with Mike Weinstein, who's filling in for Gina Cervetti. Coming up this half hour, a two-star general killed in a green-on-blue attack in Afghanistan. Western Africans wonder why they can't get the drug used to treat two U.S. Ebola victims. And on a lighter note, the women in Congress who sleep in their offices. We'll have that report in about 20 minutes. It's day two of the ceasefire between Israel and Hamas, the middle part of a three-day truce that began yesterday. Wall Street Journal reporter Nicholas Casey says some Gaza residents have returned to their homes only to find bullets, landmines, and other leftovers from the conflict. He joins us this morning from Gaza City. Nicholas, what's it like today?
Well, there's a real noticeable difference from how things were even during the last ceasefires that have gone on. people in the last ceasefires had gone quickly to go get some food and run back inside. But yesterday, starting yesterday, you could really see that people in Gaza were ready for this war to be finished and were really showing everybody that by going out, going back to houses, going out in fishing boats, going out in every way possible and saying that they were actually going to stay in their places. You really got a sense, at least, that people here see the war as finished.
Any indications of fighting at all?
No, none so far. Just before the ceasefire started, Hamas and Israel both sent volleys off towards each other. I heard some of these come in just before, a few minutes before the ceasefire began. And since then, things have been very quiet. Right now, the leaders on both sides are in Cairo trying to hammer out some sort of more permanent deal that they can put in place. But both sides have been able to keep their soldiers off from attacking each other, which is a really good thing.
Right. So what else are people doing at this point?
Well, they're trying to sort of get in touch with relatives to determine where people are. People are going out to see if there's anything left of their homes. Sadly, a lot of people are going back to neighborhoods now where there's really nothing left.
We're speaking with Wall Street Journal reporter Nicholas Casey in Gaza City about day two of the ceasefire between Israel and Hamas. So what about the availability of food and water?
Well, that's a big concern right now because the electricity plant was almost destroyed during the war, and people think it's going to take about 6 months to a year to get it back up and running. This has big effects on everything. The water supply, the sewage is overflowing. There's also no progress yet in opening the terminals. So if you're just walking around Gaza, you're starting to see that they're out of things in many stores. There are no dairy products here left anymore because everything is spoiled. There's no electricity. Things like cigarettes are starting to run out. You can't get Marlboros in Gaza anymore.
So what are things like politically within Gaza? Is there hatred for Israelis among typical Palestinians? Or, like, do they put pressure on Hamas to stop firing rockets so the exchanges will end?
I've been asking that a lot, and I think outside of the Gaza Strip, there is an impression that there is a deep-seated hatred of Israel. And I think a lot of people in Gaza worked in Israel for many years before it was closed. They know Israel really well. It was a lot of a similar relationship that Mexico and the U.S. had with the workers going on either side. So people in Gaza, I think, are just really scared. They're scared that both sides will start fighting again and that they may be caught in the crossfire once again in this. So a lot of the conversations I had weren't about how much people hated Israel, but just how much or how people, you know, hated Hamas for having gotten involved in this, but just how they wanted both sides to try to find out some sort of arrangement that they could live with each other, and so Gaza could be opened up again so people could continue to work in Israel, get supplies coming in out of Israel and from other parts of the world, so this place wasn't such an isolated enclave anymore.
Thanks, Nicholas. Wall Street Journal reporter Nicholas Casey with us today from Gaza City. 21 minutes now before the hour on the Wall Street Journal this morning. Thanks for being with us. Remember to check out the new WSJ radio app and the new MarketWatch Radio Network app. Both bring the latest episodes of all your favorite programming right to your fingertips. You could download the WSJ radio app and the MarketWatch Radio Network app for iPhone and iPad now at Apple's App Store. The Wall Street Journal this morning's Mike Gavin here now with a look at some of the stories we're following.
And Gordon, bleak, grim, gloomy, and depressing, just some of the words being used to describe the findings in the new Wall Street Journal NBC News poll. Americans are registering record levels of anxiety about the opportunities available to younger generations and are pessimistic about the nation's long-term prospects, directing their blame at elected leaders in Washington, including the president. Overseas, Russian President Vladimir Putin is defiant in the face of U.S. and European sanctions against Russia, saying he has ordered his government to prepare retaliatory measures. Mike Weinstein will have more in America's First News coming up. Gordon, there has been no shortage of hot-button topics this summer, and unfortunately, some people like to discuss those openly and confrontationally on Facebook. For those of us who want to stay out of the fray and keep our Facebook feed more cordial, The Wall Street Journal's Allison Lichter has some ideas that users and experts have shared with her. For instance, you could always block or unfriend someone, but maybe you should be careful who you let in as a friend in the first place.
Some people avoid friending anyone on Facebook that they think they'll find themselves in a conflict with. One woman told us that she never has blocked or unfriended people because she's really vigilant about who she friends in the first place.
So you got to be, you know, a little more selective. Don't just let anybody in.
Yeah, I think I know all of about maybe four or five people that are friends.
Right.
I know them all in some way, shape, or form. There's four or five, you know, that came in when I first started, I think, that I've never actually met. But
So you know all except for four or five. I thought you meant you only know four or five.
Oh, no. All but four or five,
I think.
Yeah.
Well, that's good. So you're very selective. So, you know, hopefully you're not getting too much
Doesn't mean that I haven't blocked or, you know, 400 of them or so.
Right.
It's like we've discussed before. There's only a handful of people I'm interested in actually hearing from, even though I've got, you know, a couple hundred friends.
Right. And no matter how good you are about doing that, there's always somebody that's going to sort of pop off on some crazy rant or something, and you might feel the need to possibly block them. Now, another strategy that Allison says some are using is reaching out privately to someone who you think is saying something offensive.
They'll reach out to a friend in a private message and say something like, hey, I see you posted this thing. I want to ask you some more questions about it because I didn't really understand where you were coming from. And in doing that, they're able to have a more reasonable private conversation without the kind of peer pressure that can arise when they're having a debate in public in front of all of their other friends.
Now, is anybody actually doing that is the question. I guess this one person she spoke to was doing that, but is that something you'd ever do?
Well, that's kind of a roundabout way of asking somebody, hey, jerk. Your political views are so far off base, you know, who do you think you are, right?
That's, you know, you're probably going to do that with someone who you really like or you're really close to. Somebody who you don't want to block from your feed, for instance. Someone who maybe a close family member, maybe a parent, somebody like that. And you're going to do that to them because you're like, look, I don't want to block you, so I'm just going to tell you that you're really annoying me right now, and here's why.
And then what? Then you become a censor. You know, restricting somebody else's, you know, free speech rights. You know, it's your choice. That's how you would just don't like it. Then don't comment on it.
Yeah, that is true. Never thought about the censorship part, but that is true. But I mean, no matter which tact you decide, pretty much all these experts agree that you should really take your time before deciding to engage anyone in any of these discussions. That's something I think used to happen a lot more in the beginnings of Facebook. People used to engage each other and comment back and forth and have these wars. And I think we've all gotten a lot smarter in the last few years about how we're perceived and making sure that we're not putting anything out there that we don't want to come back and bite us later.
That's a good point. Yeah, definitely greater awareness. Thank you, Mike. It is 14 minutes now before the hour on the Wall Street Journal this morning.
I own a growing company, and predictable monthly expenses make it easier to run my business. That's why I switched to the T-Mobile Simple Choice for Business plan. We get unlimited data with no overage charges, all in America's fastest 4G LTE network. Now it doesn't matter how much data my team needs every month. My bill stays the same. Switch to T-Mobile at T-Mobile.com/business.
Limited time only, subject to change. Fastest 4G LTE based on download speeds. See T-Mobile.com for details.
This portion of the program is brought to you by Stamps.com. Computers are designed to make running a business easier, including your mailing and shipping. Just use Stamps.com to get 24-hour access to the post office right from your computer. No waiting in line, no hassles. Stamps.com makes mailing and shipping easy. Just use the computer and printer you already have to get official U.S. postage for any letter, any package, then print the postage directly onto envelopes, labels, even plain paper, and hand it to your mail carrier. There's no guesswork. Stamps.com will send you a digital scale that automatically calculates the exact postage you need for any class of mail. You'll never have to go to the post office again. Right now, use the promo code WSJ for this special offer, a no-risk trial plus a $110 bonus offer that includes a digital scale and up to $55 free postage. Don't wait. Go to Stamps.com. Before you do anything else, click on the microphone at the top of the homepage and type in WSJ. That's Stamps.com. Enter WSJ. It's 10 minutes now before the hour on the Wall Street Journal this morning. Mike Weinstein is back. He's got America's first news.
Gordon, an attacker dressed in an Afghan army uniform opened fire on a group of visiting military officials, killing two-star General Howard Green. The 17 also were injured before the gunman was shot and killed. Harold Green was 52 years old and is the highest-ranking officer to be killed during the Operation Enduring Freedom. Two Americans continue to be treated for Ebola in Atlanta. This is Liberian officials are questioning why the experimental drug being used is not available to their citizens infected with the disease. Also raising eyebrows is the perception that the U.S. only got involved in the Ebola outbreak because our citizens were infected.
I'm confident that we're not going to have widespread Ebola in the U.S.
That is White House spokesman Josh Earnest talking about how the Ebola outbreak occurred back in March, and the Americans have been looking into it ever since. There is new hope about the status of the girls abducted by Boko Haram in Nigeria. Recent U.S. surveillance flights over the northeastern part of the country revealed that what appeared to be large groups of girls being held in remote locations, it raises optimism that the girls have not been forced into marriage or sex slavery. And Hawaii preparing for a double whammy of nasty weather. Residents loaded up on bottled water and other essentials as Hurricane Izelle is set to arrive by tomorrow, followed shortly thereafter by Tropical Storm Julio. A hurricane has not come ashore in Hawaii since 1992. The latest poll from the Wall Street Journal and NBC paints a pessimistic picture of Americans' thoughts about the economy. And as the Journal's Patrick O'Connor tells us, these feelings are not of the here today, gone tomorrow variety.
70% of adults say that it is on the wrong track, which is a very high threshold. 76% say that their children are not going to have as good a life as they did.
He added a big part of the problem is that many of those surveyed have not experienced a recovery in their personal financial lives, similar to the overall upturn of the U.S. economy. NASDAQ futures down 18 and dropping. S&P 500 futures have lost 6. Could be another rough day on Wall Street. And finally, Gordon, apparently not everyone showing respect to Derek Jeter during his final season in pinstripes. Last night, Detroit reliever Jabba Chamberlain stuck his tongue out at the future Hall of Famer, then drilled him in the arm with a pitch. Chamberlain later apologized to his former teammate, a mea culpa that Jeter did appreciate.
Stuck his tongue out?
And then drilled him.
What is he, four?
I don't know. He's got a big, thick beard now. He looks a little different than he used to be
on the Yankees. Right. Yeah, something discouraged in the Bronx there, the beard, right?
Certainly.
And then you had this this Justin Verlander, Kate Upton moment, right where he tosses her the ball.
I didn't see that. Nice.
Monday's game. He wasn't pitching. So she's sitting right behind the visitor's dugout there, and he tosses her the ball, and she's got this cute reaction.
New A-list couple, I suppose.
Yeah, I guess so. Been busy there for Yanks Detroit, making off-the-field, somewhat off-the-field news. 7 minutes now in front of the hour on the Wall Street Journal this morning. Thanks for being with us. Women in Congress are now sleeping in their offices. Wall Street Journal reporter Michael Crittenden says, at the most recent count, 3 women lawmakers, all of them Republicans, are bunking in their offices while in Washington, adding to the 24 or so men who are already doing so. He found Kristi Noem of South Dakota, Lynn Jenkins of Kansas, and Jamie Herrera Butler of Washington doing it. Michael, what are the reasons?
It obviously saves money, and especially we were talking, one of the representatives was saying she had been splitting an apartment with a fellow congressperson, and there was bugs and, you know, a basement apartment and bugs and mice and such, and she's like, why don't I just sleep in my office? I'm not here. Jeez. That many days. Yeah, so she got a sleeper sofa in her office, basically at the end of the day, just sort of shuts the door, turns out the lights, and pulls out the sheets.
So what are those sleeping arrangements for most of them? A sleeper sofa or a cot, couch?
Basically, you get a range of things. We were talking, one of the congresswomen says she has a really nice air mattress. She went for the fancy one. The message a lot of them are trying to send, it's not just saving money. There's also sort of a political message, and that's, you know, I'm not setting up shop permanently here in Washington, obviously. Yeah. You know, I'm here to represent you, but I'm not getting comfortable here, so don't. Probably plays well in some districts. So,
right.
Yeah, but no, we've got some funny stories. One of the congresswomen was saying she was in her office one night, you know, tapping away on her laptop on her sleeper sofa and saw a mouse come in through the door and freaked out.
That's a funny story, maybe in your mind.
No, she was not pleased. She's like, I may have been raised on a farm, but I don't like mice. So she ended up having one of her staffers come back to the office, help her move all the furniture, move everything off the floor, and then had her staffer duct tape her into her office for the evening so that the mouse could not scurry back in later.
Thanks, Mike. Wall Street Journal reporter Michael Crittenden. I like the message that some send by saying we are not here to set up camp in Washington, right? The message that they're not going to be career politicians. For Mike Weinstein, I'm Gordon Deal. Thanks for listening to the Wall Street Journal this morning.
I'm Lex Friedman. I run my own business, so I know from experience hiring new employees can be tough. Posting your job in one place isn't enough to find quality candidates. If you want to find the perfect hire, you need to post your job on all the top job sites, and now you can. With ZipRecruiter.com, you can post your job to 50-plus job sites, including Craigslist, LinkedIn, and Twitter, all with a single click. Find candidates in any industry nationwide. Just post once and watch your qualified candidates roll in to ZipRecruiter's easy-to-use interface. No juggling emails or calls to your office. Quickly screen candidates, rate them, and hire the right person fast. Find out today why ZipRecruiter has been used by over 200,000 businesses. And right now, our listeners can post jobs on ZipRecruiter for free by going to ZipRecruiter.com/WSJ. That's ZipRecruiter.com/WSJ. One more time, to try it for free, go to ZipRecruiter.com/WSJ.